Hello, my name is Ashraf Sami Higab. Today, hopefully, it's going to get a little bit technical, but don't worry, I'm going to try making it very simple. But what I want at the end of this session, if you haven't ever done a WebGL app, if you haven't ever done a game, you to actually go out, even for the hackathon tonight, and make your own one. Hopefully, it's going to be that simple, and you're going to get that knowledge out. What we're trying to build here is a cross-platform 3D multiplayer game. So not just for Tizen, iOS, Android, Windows Phone, Ubuntu, Sailfish, and it should work. The slide's already published. It's on the Twitter account on the bottom right. So we want to make our own games. Can I just ask the crowd, has anyone here delved into WebGL before? That's great. So we've got around 3 people. What about, has anyone actually published their own multiplayer game? Okay, we've got expert. I'm expecting a really good question from you. And guys, since this is a very intimate crowd, if you ever want me to stop at any time, just feel free to jump on the mic and let's be very, very friendly with each other. So we're going to start off with going 3D. What's WebGL? I know a couple of guys know what it is. Where it's applicable, what platforms it works on, how to draw a cube. Drawing something is the simplest primitive to go. We're going to talk about how to go multiplayer, talk about what WebSockets is, and then how to actually move in a multiplayer world. Then finally, we're going to switch up a gear, and we're going to say, how do we apply that to work across all the platforms? So what is WebGL? WebGL is Web Graphics Layer. It's based on an API called OpenGL ES. But the amazing thing about it is its footprint is growing exponentially. So right now, on the default BlackBerry browser, the Tizen browser, Firefox OS, Ubuntu, it all supports WebGL. So you can have advanced 3D graphics in a web browser. Now, it does also work on iOS. iOS allows you to publish WebGL IADS, and you can enable it using a private API, which gives us suspicions that it might be enabled in future versions of iOS. It does work on some Android browsers. So the new HTC One, the default browser that comes with it, actually works with WebGL. Inside Chrome, you can enable the WebGL flag, and you can actually have WebGL running. The newest version of Internet Explorer 11, does have a flag to support WebGL. So within the next year, this pie will be shrinking. So if you make a game or an app using JavaScript, which uses 3D graphics, as in WebGL, it will work across all these platforms. I'm just going to slow it down a little bit and just tell you the really simple primitives you'll be dealing with if you want to be using WebGL. So if you want to be writing this stuff yourself and not be using an engine or an API, it's still good to learn how this infrastructure works. So there's these 4 primitives. Base primitives, you can have more later on when you get advanced. Vertices, UVs, indices, and normals. A vertex or vertices is just a point in the world. It's an XYZ coordinate. So in that triangle here, the bottom left is -1x and -1y. So it's bottom left. The bottom right is +1x. It should be -1y and 0z. And the top is 0, 1. So that's what a vertex is. UVs define how a texture, an image, maps onto that triangle. Normals, that defines how light would interact with that image. So for example, if my normal is pointing this way, that means when light hits me, it's going to bounce back in that direction. And finally, indices is a way to represent it's a way to streamline your vertices to explain to the graphics card how to draw it without specifying too much vertices. I'll give you a little example of that. If I had lots of triangles on the screen, I can use indices to point to which order this array of triangles would be used. So I wouldn't have to rewrite the same triangles over and over again in a pattern. I can just draw one triangle and point the indices over and over again. It might be a little bit complicated right now, but we're going to just make this a lot easier. So there's a really good website called Learning WebGL. If you haven't heard of it, it really builds you up with some amazing tutorials. I'm just going to dive straight into one of them right now, Jill. So you could maybe in the hackathon tonight actually get up and running and start making your own game. So it starts off telling you how to draw squares, how to make it rotate, how to texture it. Tells you how to make particle effects, how to make your own Doom. So I'm going to take lesson 7. And all it is right there, it's a cube. And when you press the left and right keys, it rotates around the screen. So this part of the talk is going to be the most intense session, but hopefully at least what you pick up here, you'll be able to use it in the future. I'm just going to show you how that cube is animating. So there's a function here called tick. And has anyone heard of set timeout in JavaScript? Okay, that's cool. So set timeout is a way for you to say that I'm going to draw or I'm going to do an operation in another couple of milliseconds or a certain amount of time. There's a new API, which is request an in frame tick. And that allows you to tell the web browser to tell you when it's next going to redraw the screen. So using that, you can specify your update commands or your render commands when you're going to be drawing a screen so it's in sync with the browser. So here it's calling tick, and it's requesting this function to get called to the browser. It's going to be drawing the scene and animating. So first, if we look in the draw scene function, this top block here is just saying, set up my GL viewport to take up the entire of the canvas. It's clearing it. And then this block here, it's using something called an identity matrix, which you can just ignore for now, but matrices are just a way to represent where an object is in the world and what rotation it is and what its scale would be. So here we're saying, start off with 0, then translate it using the variables x, y, and z, then rotate it across the x-axis, and then rotate it across the y-axis. So it's using these variables right now called x-rot and y-rot. And in animate, here, it's incrementing the x-rot and the y-rot depending on the speed and the amount of time that's elapsed. So here I'm going to just comment that out. I'm going to run that again, and now it's not rotating at all. Instead, I'm going to increment the variables x and y. So now I can actually control it using my keyboard, and it's moving around the world. So this is a cube, and we're moving it. So this is the base thing you need to start with a game character. It doesn't have to be a cube. It could be anything. I'm just going to bring you back into space. Finally, the next thing you need to look at is how the texture image is loaded. So over here, in this GL active texture, the next line says bind texture, and it's binding a crate texture. And that texture is loaded by creating a new image. This is a standard HTML image tag. It creates it in JavaScript, and then it points it to a GIF or GIF or however it's meant to be called, to that image. And when that image is unloaded, this block converts the image from GIF into something the graphics card can understand. But what you get at the end of it is a texture, a crate texture, that you can bind. Once you bind it, the next time you call draw elements or draw arrays, the draw function, it's going to use that image to draw that cube. I'm gonna stop right there for now, because here, this point, you can move it using the matrices, and in GeoActive Texture, GeoBind Texture, you can actually modify the image that's being displayed. So we can make it smiley face, we can make it any character. It could be a 2D sprite. So we can take this code and play with it. If you want, at the end of the session, if someone asks a question, we can delve into this more, into more details, for example, how shaders work and that stuff. But I think this is probably too much for now. If you're new to it, obviously we have some experts here. So again, just looking at this function, we have a way to set up the view, position and rotate. That block that I didn't go through inside the Sublime Text was a way of setting the buffers, so it knows what set of vertices, indices to draw. Finally, we set the texture, and then we draw it. Is that simple? No? All right, so put together this little WebGL demo that I'll show you how you can actually make a game from just drawing cubes. So this one's called Phone Wars. We're going to use this again for once we know how to do multiplayer. It's available on all the app stores. If you want to participate in the multiplayer demo later, you can download it right now. In the meantime, I'll just show you how it works. So the idea behind this game was, hey, I'm an iPhone and I'm better than an Android. No, I'm an Android. I'm better than an iPhone. So the concept is you can fight against each other. So you can be a Windows phone. I mean, not the real Windows phone. Don't sue me. An iBot or an AndroBot. So I'm going to go hit practice. And this is just me playing against AI. And all this is actually a cube on the screen with actually more complicated vertices. So you can move around, and it's just moving that cube, just like we did with the X, Y, Z before, with the up, down, left, right. And you can tap on the screen, and when you tap on the screen, it shoots another cube. And I'm going to prove that this is cubes. By showing you the collision boxes. So right now we're drawing the image and the object as well as the model. So I'm going to go inside practice again. And as you can see, it's just a cube on the screen. So if you can take that sample from learning WebGL, make your own textures. Obviously, you'll have to level up in certain other areas, for example, how to create different types of shapes and models. But you can have a game just like this. You tap, it shoots more cubes, you hit, and you collide. So the next step would be killing the screen. Beware of WebGL. It does play with your... I'm just going to hopefully try fixing this. I might have a backup, so it could be cool. Is this cable plugged in? I got it on Mac now, so it might work better. Oh, did it lose? Oh, it's unplugged. Okay, perfect. We're back, guys. So next step would be to work on collisions. And collisions can be as easy as using another library. For example, there's something called Box2Ds. There's bullet.js. So you can use that, plug that into your system. Or it can be even easier. Because they're boxes, you just need to compare if it intersects in the X region, the Y region, and the Z region. Something to be careful of is the amount of collisions you're doing in one area. So, for example, if I'm not even rendered in the screen, there's no point me colliding with other objects that are in the screen. So this comes with optimization, but as a very minimum case, you can just copy and paste that code, which just collides the X, Y, and Z. Now, you will need to level up on how to load other file formats, for example, OBJ, FBX, and 3DS. Now, OBJ and 3DS, and there's other formats, they're very open. You can load them straight into JavaScript. With a format like FBX, which is very, very popular among artists, you need to really convert it yourself from FBX format into a JSON format. So it requires a lot of more processing work. There are some libraries, which are open source, that convert FBX into model data, but they don't convert the animations as well. So there's something called FBX SDK. You can compile it, you can run it on Linux, Mac, and PC, and that can you can recompile it into JSON, and you can enter into your engine. But lucky for you guys, there's some amazing helper libraries that do a lot of this hard work for you. And one of the most popular ones out there is free.js. So if you haven't heard of that, you can just jump into that world. They have so many amazing examples, and you can run from there. So we have a way of drawing 3D stuff and moving them around. How are we going to make this a multiplayer environment? We're going to talk a little bit about WebSockets. Now, WebSockets, it's around 2 years old, I'd say, but it's TCP only, and it's not UDP. And if you're making professional games, a lot of the professional game industry, they like using UDP because it's pretty much 100 times faster than TCP, but it has a lot of packet loss. So you need to do a lot of clever algorithms to reformat the data that comes in, maybe timestamp them all, to make and do a lot of calculations to make sure that you cater for this data loss. So if you're indie or you're new, TCP is really good for you. It's persistent, so that means it's always connected unless the network operator would cut you off. It's bidirectional, which means you can send data and you can receive data at any time. And to open up a WebSocket, it's as easy as new WebSocket, on open, and then you send a message to the server, and then on message, you receive a message from the server. Looking at canIuse.com, whether WebSockets would work on the platforms out there, in my experience, obviously, it says that it isn't supported on Android. In my experience, it is supported on all the devices, but the big problem you're going to be battling with is if you're developing a mobile app, a lot of the time your users will be playing over 3G or 4G now. Now, a lot of telecoms operators, they really battle with WebSockets. So some don't allow it on certain ports. Some only allow it on the same NAT network, not internet, so the same local network. So you're going to find a lot of complexities when you're matchmaking and trying to use WebSockets. Lucky for you guys, there's some really good libraries that abstract the complexities of WebSockets by having fallback mechanisms. So some of the fallback mechanisms that they support is long polling, like having two HTTP sessions on at the same time, one sending, one receiving. They have flash sockets, but it's not really supported on mobiles. The most popular way to architect your mobile multiplayer game system is one, there's a good open source project. It was about Google I.O., I think, last year called Greats. So you can check that out. And basically, you have at the bottom a web app. You use a library called Socket.io. Has anyone here heard of Socket.io? Okay, that's good. So it's a nice abstraction layer. Very, very popular Node.js. You get to run JavaScript on the server. So if you're making JavaScript apps, you get to reuse some of the libraries you'd be making on the server. And popular database provider, obviously it's in debate, but one to get up and started at the very least is MongoDB. Good thing about a database provider like that, it supports JSON. So if you send messages in JavaScript, JSON is a native type. So you can send the JSON to Node.js, and the object is still existent. You can save that object inside MongoDB and then retrieve it at any time. So it's very, very homogeneous with the web. Have you guys all used Socket.io before? Okay, so this very, very simple how to get up started on the client. You include the script for it, and all you do is socket, io.connect, I've got a laser pointer, so io.connect to your server URL, including your port. And then when you're connected, the server's going to send you, in this implementation, your user ID, a special token to indicate who you are. So you're going to just make note of that. And then when you're going to be shooting at an enemy, you're going to call the function shoot at, and you're going to provide a user ID. And then you're going to call a function called socket.emit. We're going to pass a special tag called shoot, and we're going to pass in the user ID. Over in the server, you start up by saying socket.io.listen, and then you give a port number. Having a workable port number is very, very important. I found in my experience that using port 80 and port 8080, the known ones, is bad because the telecoms operators would cut you up if you're trying to do WebSockets. But if you're ever trying to do multiplayer gaming inside hotels or private business networks, you really need to use port 80 and port 8080. A good suggestion would actually be having two instances running on different ports and having it toggle between depending on the network you're in. So on connection, that's whenever a connection is made to the server, it's just going to be recording, it's going to be pushing the socket onto a sockets array. Now, socket.io does this kind of for you using a broadcasting system, but just to simplify it, you can do it yourself. We're going to be getting user ID by just incrementing a global user ID value. So every user ID is unique. Potentially, you want to be saving this in a database, so every single user ID is unique throughout the entire existence. And then you're going to emit the connected message with the user ID. So that goes back to when you get connected onto the client. Now, whenever the server receives the shoot message, it's just going to iterate through the sockets list and emit the shoot message with the user ID that's shooting and the user ID that's being attacked. By doing this, we're going to go into how to make this more secure slightly later on, but by doing this, you've broadcasted a message and that server's broadcasted it to all the clients. So you can now propagate that shoot message. Now, this is pretty cool because this sort of method is very compatible with, if anyone attended Google I/O's talk about their new multiplayer engine, they have a very, very similar architecture to this. So you can piggyback on their server in that case, or you can use your own server when you want to do cross-platform, truly cross-platform. So I'm going to go back to this demo and show you how it works with multiplayer. If you want to participate, it's Phone Wars. If you don't, I'll launch two versions just in case. So I'm going to enter this game, and I'm going to enter this Battle Royale mode. And like that, we've spawned. Obviously, I showed you the shooting mechanic, but here the server's spawning different locations. The client's picking up the location, and it's modifying the XYZ that we looked at earlier, where it would start from. So we've got about four people online, and you just tap to move, and then you tap on another character to shoot. So just like before, when I'm shooting at someone, when I tap in this area, it does a collision box in the area and finds out what other enemies are colliding with the area. If it finds an enemy, it's going to tell the shoot function the user ID of the enemy. It's then going to pass that message onto the server. The server is going to propagate that message to all the clients. The clients are then, using AI, just tell the character to shoot at the enemy. So you have a replay of the action. The reason why it does this, and talk about it slightly afterwards, is because TCP is a lot slower than UDP, and the latency is around between 5 to 250 milliseconds, in my experience. When you're going for 3G, it's about 250 milliseconds. When you're going into Wi-Fi, it gets really, really fast with 5 milliseconds, especially with WebSockets. So you need to do a bit of clever tricks to get around just shooting at a particular location. I probably fast-forwarded that again, but so right now we have eight players online. we're shooting at each other, and it's just really just using that simple bit of code that we showed earlier. Just like you shoot, you move. So when I tap here, it's just saying move, and it replays that message. It's that easy. So sorry, guys. I'm going to pause this. I know someone's having fun here. Maybe somewhere else. I don't know what's going on. I'm just going to pause this for a second. I mean, it's still running, so, but you should be paying attention, right? So what you're going to have to do next is server-side validation. What that means is anyone here right now can easily hack the system, start sending their own messages, and mess up your gameplay. So a good thing to do is make sure that the code runs is simulated also on the server for validation. And only 5 minutes left. Is that including Q&A? Okay, cool. Time flies. I'm really sorry. If you have any questions, let me know. Going multiplayer, I'm going to fast forward this quickly because you only got 5 minutes left. Supporting Tizen. Now, Tizen, when you make a new web application, you need to set up the access origin in the config.xml to pretty much star. That allows you to make XHR requests to any domain. That's just something that a web app would want to do. In my experience, I found that the XHR state, it should be 200, but sometimes it comes back as 0. This could be a bug in the emulator, so just be prepared for that. If you're supporting Android and you have the Android file transfer app starting up, if you try plugging into a device, it won't recognize the device, and you need to force close it and reset your machine, especially if you're on Mac. Simulator is fast. The emulator is slow. I got rejected from the Tizen store for not using a circular icon, so make sure you use circular icons. By default, Eclipse creates a circle around your icon for you, but you also need to submit a 512, so you need to make that circle yourself. I'm going to find out if they accept it. IndexedDB, it's an amazing API. It gives you 50 megabytes of storage, so rather than always fetching the data to yourself from the server, you can cache it in your storage. It's slow, so make sure you use a priority queue. Basically, don't just send messages to IndexedDB and ask for data back. Have a queue. Send one message at a time. So if you have an important message, you send that first. If you put timestamps in your file, in your cache, you get to know which ones you should delete if you go over the file size limit. So if you ever receive an error because you're using too much data, if you timestamp it, it'll be fine. Web Workers is amazing. There's a open source library, json.async. Basically, when you start using JSON to represent your models, you get model formats and animation formats between 4 to 14 megabytes. If you try running that using json.parse, you get around 1.8 seconds of messing the main thread. So if you just put that operation onto another thread using web workers, you don't gain that. When you're working with platforms, HTML5 platforms, you really need to use inline web workers, and there's an example right there how to use it. These slides are available already online. I'll give you a link afterwards. Medium P position, when you're making shaders, it's the most compliant one. You can use high P. The only one that I found that uses medium P is Chrome on Android on some platforms, but BlackBerry, Tizen, they all support high P. IndexedDB, beware. There's a deprecated or depreciated function called set version. You still need to prepare for that use case and always prepare to falling back to local storage. And when you want to go into iOS, Android, and Windows Phone, because they're not HTML5 native yet, you need to do some crazy abstraction layer to make it support. So you can actually have JavaScript running on an iOS device, but you need to get into OpenGL, Direct3D, C++, kind of like an abstraction layer like this, where on the left you have your application, and then you have a JavaScript proxy, which converts the JavaScript function calls into C++ calls, which then calls your renderer, which converts it to either OpenGL rendering or Direct3D rendering. There's a really good use case, which I'll quickly show you why you should use JavaScript over native. And JavaScript is a dynamic language, and it's a function called eval, which a lot of people confuse it with evil. And I'll give you an example why that's really, really good, that you can actually rewrite your JavaScript in real time. So I'm going to launch right now an iOS simulator. Boo. Okay, no boos. I'm also going to launch the Tizen simulator. Yay! Okay. Oh, what? Okay, I'm gonna just show you what's possible by just the end use cases. I'm almost out of time. So right now, I'm in a HTML5 app, and I'm in a native app. And they're in the same world, and I can shoot each other and all that stuff. But what's even cooler is I've got the JavaScript file in the cloud. So I'm just going to re-change this line of code. I'm going to hit save, Command S, and it's going to propagate. And actually, I've changed the source code on a native iOS application and a HTML5 application by using this amazing real-time scripting. I'm out of time. We're going to be going into further detail about this eval stuff at SIGGRAPH in 2013. We've been working with a lot of kids at the moment trying to make making games easier. There's a really good partner we work with in the UK called Apps for Good. They're currently shortlisted for being one of the most Google's competitions. So check out their website online. Thanks for your time. If you have any questions... some answers here right now. The slides are available right now. If you go to Twitter, multiplay.io, there's a link out there, and I've also posted the guys at the back. The code for this crazy stuff that we're doing, it's going to be open sourced, and at the moment it's private beta, but it's going to be open sourced end of June. You can find out more information on our website. If you have questions, just go to the mics really quickly or shout out and repeat.
Just real quick, this is going to sound like a shameless plug, but it's not. We're adding, I'm with Lude, and we're adding...
You guys are awesome. Lude is really amazing. They do the same sort of abstraction where they convert JavaScript into C++.
Thank you. So we do the abstraction, yeah. Like you said, so you don't have to do it yourself. We're adding WebGL support to the Cocoon.js library. That'll be available this month, June. So you can build your games. It'll support WebGL. It'll go back to 2.3 for Android and support an iOS. So iOS doesn't support it. Android doesn't support it. We do support it. So you'll be able to build WebGL games and deliver them to iOS. Of course, we do the wrapper. We do the wrapper for iOS. We do the wrapper for Android. We'll build for Tizen. The other thing is we accelerate WebSockets. So just FYI.
Do you support Windows Phone as well?
We don't support Windows Phone yet.
It's possible, and there's an open source library that converts OpenGL into Direct 3D. Google use it for Chrome as well.
Hi, I just short question. Because to do anything in WebGL, you just need this bunch of code. So the question is, if, for example, I use 3.js, which I have no experience yet, how much simpler would it be?
Pretty much, they put those lines of code into functions. But the amazing thing about 3.js, they give you so much more value. So they give you a camera class. They give you a way to all these different shader modules. So you get lighting effects for free. They give you particle effects for free. They give you ways to play videos for free. So I just showed you a really simple use case of drawing a cube. But if you want to level up, do some amazing effects, they give you so much more. But it's pretty much, you can just grab that bit of code, put it in a function, draw a cube, and call that 100 times.
Okay, so basically it will be much easier, yeah, to start off with a WebGL, with a 3.js, and then with a...
If you're starting, you want to get something done, use 3.js. I totally recommend it.
Yeah, thanks.
There's also some competitive ones you can use as well.
Okay, thanks.
Yeah. I think, any more questions? Or you get a free T-shirt if you ask a question. I've picked up one from Havoc and one from Firefox OS. Oh, dude, it's you! I'm going to give you a T-shirt. Okay, guys, thank you very much for your time. You can rate. You can give me bad rating, good rating, whatever it is. Your feedback is appreciated. We want to improve. Thanks.